You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Dozens of species of fish and shellfish are caught in New England's waters, but only a handful show up in most seafood retailers. You can probably list them. Cod, haddock, scallops, clams, lobster. Well, now it's not just anecdotal. A citizen science initiative has found that those five species dominate at New England seafood counters and that some of the species that are actually the most common out in the ocean are the rarest in our markets. That's largely a reflection of our food tastes, but it can have ecological as well as economic ramifications. So Eating with the Ecosystem, the group that ran the Citizen Science Project, has also released a cookbook to help us enjoy a greater diversity of seafood. It's called Simmering the Sea, Diversifying Cookery to Sustain Our Fisheries. Kate Masery is Program Director for Eating with the Ecosystem and the coordinator of the Eat Like a Fish Research Project. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Kate, we all have a sense of this just from going to the store, but why did you think it was really important to put numbers to this mismatch between what's in the ocean and what's in our seafood markets?
Well, yeah, as consumers, we've all been to a fish market before or to a grocery store and seen kind of what species are available in the marketplace. But for us at Eating with the Ecosystem, we're a very science-based organization. We care about the data. And so for us, it was important to actually collect information to make sure that just what our assumptions were correct. And then to collect information on how to kind of work towards a better match between what's actually produced in our waters and what's actually in our marketplace.
So how did you go about collecting that data?
So we enrolled 86 citizen scientists in our Eat Like a Fish Citizen Science Project. And so these were just normal people from all over New England, all the coastal states, I should say. And their job was to look at the availability of 52 different New England species in the marketplace. And so each week they received a fish list, which was four randomly generated fish out of 52 possible species. And everybody's fish list was different each week. And they were sent to up to three markets looking for their fish.
Are we talking about dedicated seafood markets or just the grocery store? Only fresh fish, also frozen? I mean, what were the constraints there?
So they were allowed to look at any type of market that sold fish. So it could be a regular grocery store. It could be a specific fish market. It could be some direct sales in some case, directly from fishermen or community-supported fisheries, that kind of thing. Or it could be kind of a small mom-and-pop shop that, you know, had some seafood. And so literally any place that sold seafood, they were allowed to shop at. And it could include frozen as well as fresh.
So we've already mentioned the five species that were found most commonly: cod, haddock, softshell clams, scallops, and lobsters.
Yes.
What were the ones that are found in New England's waters, fished in New England, but you almost never saw in a fish market?
We had 52 species included in the study, and the five that you mentioned, those were the top five that were found more than 50% of the time. But the rest of the species, 47 species, were found less than 50% of the time, and 30 of those species were found less than 10% of the time. So it was a number of species, but some examples include...
I won't make you list all 30.
Yeah, some examples include dogfish or scup, whiting, butterfish, mahi-mahi, red hake, a lot of our flounders, Acadian redfish. The list kind of goes on.
Wow. I want to bring in another voice here. Michael Fogarty is a senior scientist at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center with the Ecosystem Research Program. Mike, from a science perspective and an ecosystem perspective, is this a problem, this mismatch between what's in the ocean, what's being caught, and what's being sold locally?
Well, I think it's really an important advantage of selling it locally, and also having a broader diversity of species represented in the marketplace provides more security for both fishers, and it's likely, if done properly, to have lesser impact on the ecosystem as a whole rather than highly selective removals of just certain species, which we've typically had in the past. So just as a financial advisor would tell you to maintain a diverse portfolio, I think what's really important about Kate's work is this idea of actually trying to make that a reality in the seafood markets.
Mike, there's been a big push really in recent years towards something called ecosystem-based management, trying to manage our fisheries not just as disconnected species, but as a whole ecosystem. How different is that in a nuts and bolts sense from traditional management? I mean, in the end, don't you still need to have limits for each individual species? How different does it look?
There are three principal elements that differ. One is that we're taking a place-based approach, so we'll have management plans for defined ecological regions. So, for example, most people who are listening will be aware of Georges Bank as an important fishing ground. It also has some very distinct ecological properties that mean it's an appropriate unit for us to consider for a separate management plan. The second part is that we're going to look at interrelationships among the species. Who eats whom? What are the potential competitors? And also their relationship to the environment. And because we're in a rapidly changing climatic environment, that becomes very important. And the third part that's different than conventional management, and this is the part that really links to what Kate and her colleagues are doing, is that we want to bring in humans as an integral part of the ecosystem, not something apart. And so this is really essentially trying to close that loop and making sure that we connect with the ecosystem in very realistic ways.
So let's take a single species as an example. And I know the point is that we're not supposed to just be eating one species all the time. We should be diversifying. But pick one of those species that is commonly caught in New England that's probably the stock is in good shape. There's enough there to have a sustainable fishery, but that we almost never see in the fish market, and maybe we need more of a market for.
Mm-hmm. Well, spiny dogfish is one that comes to mind. Now, we do have some local fisheries. In fact, there's a niche market that's developed for some of our Chatham fishermen who capture spiny dogfish and also skates and have markets for them. Basically, in that case, it's a fish that's underutilized in a very large fraction of the catch of spiny dogfish, which is quite common in the nets of fishermen, particularly trawl fishermen, is discarded. So we really can develop imbalances in an ecosystem for that reason. So what we'd like to do is to, again, have a more diversified portfolio, including species like spiny dogfish, and take from a broader spectrum of species, but less from each, so that we do less harm to the overall ecological structure.
Kate Masry, then if we shift over to the cookbook, Simmering the Sea, spiny dogfish is in there, right?
Can
you give us an example? Because a lot of us have never encountered spiny dogfish in a food setting, right? What would we do with it?
So spiny dogfish is actually very popular as fish and chips over in Europe. And so if you've been over to England and ordered fish and chips, most likely you've actually eaten spiny dogfish and not even realized it. And so the recipe that we have in Simmering the Sea is also for a fish and chips style dogfish. It's actually very meaty. It's a white meat, but mild flavor. So a lot of people who have it fried can't really tell the difference between that and cod.
If you had to pick another favorite recipe from the cookbook, something that people might not have encountered before, what would it be?
I have a lot of favorites, but we have a recipe for slipper limpets in the cookbook, which I'm pretty sure most of us have never encountered before. And so we have a Manhattan-style chowder recipe that uses slipper limpets.
And instead of clams.
Instead of clams, yeah. And you could add clams in there with it if you wanted to. One of the nice things about all of these recipes is that, you know, you can add a lot of different species to them and kind of subs fish out depending on what you have available. We actually have suggestions at the bottom of each recipe for alternative species that you could use. But slipper limpets is kind of a fun one that most people didn't realize you could even eat.
I was, you know, thinking we were going to go the direction of escargot or something with that.
We do have a periwinkle recipe in there as well.
Wow. Okay. So this definitely is diverse. Mike Fogarty, I want to go back to your description of what a more ecosystem-based approach to fishing might look like. It was almost like you were describing kind of skimming off the top of the entire ecosystem, that you'd want to take a little bit of everything out. Is that kind of the goal?
Well, among the options that we're looking at is to have target levels of catch aimed at groups of species rather than individual species, but still maintain the protection. So we're continuing to monitor the individual species. And if we begin to see signs of trouble in any of them, then we could put the appropriate safeguards in place to avoid a sharp decline. This is more consistent with the way the fish are caught, to think about them as being caught together.
Right. I mean, if you put a net down there, it's hard to say net only catch cod today.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, it's impossible. Although fishermen are very good naturalists and keen observers of nature, but they just can't simply exactly target any of the species. And one of the difficulties we encounter with current management is that it's effectively assumed that they can. And so target levels that are taken for individual species or set for individual species very often cannot be met exactly because of this problem we're just talking about. And so they either overshoot or undershoot the mark. And that's, from an economic point of view, of course, not optimal. So we're looking for ways to really take that directly into account. And also the fact that as predator-prey relationships affect the overall catches, that what we do to one species is going to affect others. And right now, we don't take that into account. So we could have management plans that are really working at cross purposes unless we do a better job of looking at this as not a collection of parts, but an integrated whole.
So how close or far are we from getting to this point you're describing of a more ecosystem-based management system here in New England?
In New England, we've been working very closely with the New England Fishery Management Council to develop what's called a fishery ecosystem plan. And we're aiming to put a draft document before the council in the fall.
Kate Masry, where do you see the work that you're doing at Eating with the Ecosystem fitting into this attempt to transition to a more ecosystem-based management system? What is it you're hoping will come out of things like this citizen science study that shows us what's actually in our fish markets?
So Eating with the Ecosystem kind of sees itself as the market component to ecosystem-based management. And so Mike used language like place-based, and that's the same language that we use as well when we're talking to consumers about eating a wider diversity of species kind of in proportion to their natural abundances and making sure that we're adapting our diets with ecosystem changes and supporting our fishing communities and taking care of the habitats and all of that.
It seems almost like an extension of the very popular local food movement.
Exactly.
We're not as, you know, local food typically comes from a farm, right? Not from a wild ecosystem. And these ocean ecosystems are somewhat unfamiliar to most of us. I mean, they're out there underwater off the coast.
They are, yeah. So they're very complex. So in an ideal world, you know, if 5% of the ocean consisted of black sea bass, then 5% of our diets would consist of black sea bass. And if 10% of the ocean consisted of monkfish, 10% of our diets would consist of monkfish. But to know that in real time in those exact proportions is very, very difficult. And so for us, to teach consumers just there is this wide diversity of species, and if you kind of diversify your diet and be less selective, be more adaptable in what you eat, eat kind of all of these species, but, you know, in smaller amounts, and kind of spread it out throughout all of these species, then we can kind of really have minimal impacts on our marine food webs and maintain more of a natural balance.
At the same time, given the data that you've just generated, eating more diversely, eating a broader range of seafood species is not necessarily easy because they're not easy to find in the retail market. So it is part of the goal here to try to make a shift there. And how do consumers start to put some pressure and push in this direction?
Yeah, one of the goals definitely is to make a shift to try to see more representation for some of these species that were underrepresented in our marketplace. And so I think our citizen scientists actually did a great job in leading the way in terms of what any consumer can do. They asked for these species. Each time they went to the market, they asked for some of these local species. And they received, you know, generally very positive feedback back from the fish markets themselves. The fish markets were like, oh, no one ever asked for that. We can get that for you. In some cases, they're like, you know, we don't have it, but we have this other really similar species.
Yeah.
So, Heather, another avenue for this is that there is an evolving movement towards community-supported fisheries, just as there is for agriculture. And in those systems, as you know, people are encouraged to try different things along with some of the mainstays in their diet. So it's another vehicle that could help this movement to making these less commonly marketed foods more familiar to folks.
And it can certainly make life a little bit more interesting.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right. Well, the cookbook is Simmering the Sea, Diversifying Cookery to Sustain Our Fisheries. Kate Masry is the Program Director for Eating with the Ecosystem. And Michael Fogarty is a Senior Scientist at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much, Heather.